recreational and economic asset, whereas the Willamette is a river of commerce and is home to many river-dependent industries and the Port of Portland. Whereas this year, Portlanders are celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Hawthorne Bridge, an icon of our city and river. Whereas the Willamette, as it flows through Portland, is home to a host of fish, plants, and wildlife. Whereas the river and its waterfront parks offer Portlanders and visitors a tremendous, tremendous recreational resource for boating, nature tourism, and scenic appreciation. Whereas the river is a living connection between Portlanders and urban and rural neighbors throughout the Willamette's watershed. Whereas the hard work in caring for our rivers is far from done and will require the continued concentration and passion of all Portlanders. Now, therefore, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, Oregon, the City of Roses, does hereby proclaim August 20th through 22nd, 2010, to be Portland River Fest Days in Portland, to celebrate and renew our commitment to the Willamette. Ann Beyer, the Director of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, is here, and Patty Howard, who's my Rivers Assistant. And we have a lot of interesting and exciting things happening at Riverfest this weekend. I encourage you to go to the Office of Healthy Working Rivers website, check out all the fun things that you can do in and on the river, by the side of and on the river this weekend. Thank you.
Yep. Well, good morning, everybody. Sorry I'm a little late. Have Christina Blue Crow please come up, and Alex Reck, and Justin Hawking, please come forward. I'm really pleased today to read a proclamation that celebrates the 10th annual Portland Zine Symposium. And before I do that, do you want to maybe give us a little bit of background on this great symposium?
10 years ago, there were a bunch of friends who were involved in zines and zine culture in Portland, and someone said, why don't we make a zine festival? And we said, let's do it. So we got people together. And at PSU, we had we had workshops and people tabling, and people came from all over the country. This is, 10 years later, we've got people coming from all over the world for this event. Zines are kind of a small niche thing of creative arts, but it's definitely a very strong cultural experience.
It absolutely is. Anything you'd like to add, Justin?
For those that don't know, a zine is like a small self-published pamphlet, usually done for fun and rather than profit. So.
Thank you. Anything you'd like to add? No.
I'd like to add that I've been to like a dozen zine events in four different countries, and Portland is really recognized as being a very awesome hotspot for zines. So it's very, very great that you'd be able to do this for us.
We have people from Europe and the United Kingdom, France. We have people from Australia. We have people from all over America, of course, and
Canada.
Lots of people from Canada.
And someone from Korea.
All coming to attend the 10th Annual Portland Zine Symposium. And while attendance is definitely stronger this year, and we also have moved into a bigger space because we've sold out the last couple years, that people coming from so far away is the case every year the last few years. And it's really amazing to see various people from all different cultures and countries so passionate about the idea of self-expression and finding their voices and sharing their ideas in one place. And all weekend we have, the symposium itself is free, and then all weekend we have workshops. We have about 30 workshops this year over Saturday and Sunday, from everything to, one-sheet zine of how to make a zine of multiple pages from one sheet of paper to, transgendered people in zines and their experiences, to, Asian Pacific Islanders, to history, documenting history in zines.
It sounds like a very Portland-like event.
Absolutely.
That's great. I'll read the proclamation now.
Thank you.
Whereas the significance of zines and independent publishing is recognized throughout the world by the existence and celebration of International Zine Month, and whereas the zines create an outlet for any person, anywhere to express themselves and share their ideas. And whereas the creation, publication, and distribution of zines and independently made publications is a manifestation of our First Amendment rights. And whereas zines provide a forum for all ideas, stories, and histories to be shared regardless of class, race, age, gender, religion, sexual orientation. And whereas Portland represents a city in support of independent and self-publishing individuals representing their own unique voices. And whereas Portland is home to such institutions as the Independent Publishing Resources Center, as well as countless other organizations and small businesses which support zine publishing and distribution. And whereas the Portland Zine Symposium is a conference and a zine social exploring facets of independent publishing and DIY culture. And whereas the Portland Zine Symposium is celebrating its 10th anniversary, making it the longest running zine conference anywhere. Now, therefore, I, Sam Adams, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim August 28th and August 29th, 2010, to be a weekend in recognition of the 10th Annual Portland Zine Symposium in Portland. I encourage all residents to observe this wonderful weekend and to attend the conference. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Did you already call the roll?
Yeah.
Okay. Sue, can you please read the first item on communications?
Item 1144, request of Sonia Haryu to address council regarding domestic violence prevention and consequences. Is Sonia here?
Can you read the next communication item?
Request of Sue Bailey to address council regarding domestic violence prevention and consequences.
Ms. Bailey, can you please read communications item number 1146?
Request of James B. Lee to address council regarding supporting usefulness of Memorial Coliseum.
And for those of you that were here for the proclamation, we are not offended if you want to move on with the rest of your day or watch democracy happen on a local basis. It's up to you. Glad you're here. Mr. Lee, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is James Lee. I reside on Southeast Mitchell Street, and I speak only for myself. Thank you for hearing me today. Two houses, both alike in dignity, in fair Verona, where we lay our scene. When Shakespeare wrote those words more than 400 years ago, fair Verona already was 2,000 years old and dominated for three-quarters of that time by the tremendous building you see here. For context, this was inaugurated about the time Jesus was being crucified, which makes it 40 years older than the Colosseum in Rome. And where the Roman Colosseum is a magnificent ruin, this is still a very functional building. It's been carefully conserved for almost 2,000 years. Now, these two gentlemen took a wrong turn on the way at the pyramids and ended up in an Italian opera. The reason this is still such a problem, well, thank you, Nick. The reason this is such a profitable building is that during the summer, the city of Verona plays four grand operas in repertory, generating about $100 million a year during the summer in ticket sales. And when you put the multiplier effect and other events in that context, this building generates something like $500 million a year, half a billion dollars a year income to the city of Verona. Verona is not a large city. This is the money shot. My friends in IOTC Local 28 will note that this is really no different from loading in Fleetwood Mac or Jethro Tull into our version of the Colosseum. The only difference being that in Roman times they did this with ox carts and we do it with forklifts. It's difficult to get a scale of this building unless you see an aerial shot, and I suggest that you Google Arena di Verona and you will see wonderful aerial shots and also the setup of the opera. Now, this is the thumbs up shot. This is the inscription below the emperor's box, and I think what it says is that in my high school Latin, that somebody tried to tear this down after shortly after it was built, but we were able to stop them, fortunately. In short, this is the our Colosseum is based on this building design, one reason why it was so superbly functional, contributing very much to the subsidy of places like Civic Stadium and Civic Auditorium Performing Arts Center. And I expect the council to do everything it can in its power to conserve this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim.
Can you please read communications item number 1147?
Request of Barry Joe Stull to address council regarding Judge Edward Jones.
Mr. Stull, welcome back.
Let me check my notes here. That was a tritone. You'll recognize that here in Portland as the beginning notes of The Simpsons. Matt Groening was a Portlander. I think he was happy to be able to publish his work. I never got my chance. My book was destroyed unlawfully here in 2006 in the City of Roses when my landlord, Portland Community Reinvestment Initiatives, that would be under your Bureau, Housing Commissioner. They're a nonprofit here that's incredibly corrupt. And let me give you some news here. Those two notes, those are a tritone. That was illegal under the government at one point in our history. Not here in America, thank God, or thank her. Powder River Correctional Facility now has a process where the prisoners are rehabilitating abused dogs, and I think that's great. I'm here trying to rehabilitate an abused city, and the punchline is, on April 23rd, 2009, the California Supreme Court ruled in Mr. Peter Silverbrand's case against the County of Los Angeles that prison delivery rule is compelled by reason and justice. All courts have an obligation to ensure prison walls do not stand in the way of affording litigants with bona fide claims the opportunity to be heard. Unlike the California Supreme Court, Oregon didn't take that approach. My case is Stull versus Hoke, and you'll find that if you go to Google Scholar, and you'll find that it's been cited by over 100 cases since Governor Kulongoski was on the Oregon Supreme Court and he wrote that opinion. Unfortunately, here in our little city, that finding about the act of filing a case should have prevented my nonprofit landlord from filing its no-cause eviction. I raised that matter on appeal because matters of jurisdiction can be raised at any time, but the Oregon Court of Appeals said my appellant's brief had to be done over because it was 12 font and the rules changed to 13 font. I requested a reasonable accommodation to my disability because by that time, the Oregon Court of Appeals knew that my landlord had gone in March of 2006 and in October of 2006 and destroyed a total of $20,000 of my belongings, including my medical marijuana garden registered with the state. Well, I had a case issued by presiding Judge Koch for contempt of court, 07040569, and on July 7th, I subpoenaed the law enforcement officers that proved every item of that. Judge Jones recently ordered, finalized all those issues by saying that PCRI owes me $4,775 for the second time they destroyed my property illegally in October of 2006, which, of course, had I had that issue of 12 font, would have never been an issue. I would have simply redone my brief. So I sent to you, police commissioner, the data, and your police officers won't take a police report. The Oregon State Police won't take a police report.
Barry, I need you to wrap it up.
I am. And I'm telling you and all the people of the world that this corruption in this courthouse has to stop, and it stops here. So I'm going to your office, and I'm going to make arrangements for you to take a police report against Judge Edward Jones, who's a sitting judge, who obviously engaged in a violation of ORS 162.415.
I need you to wrap up. I'm finished, sir. Thanks.
I'm finished. You had your chance years ago to correct this, and you allowed it to happen.
All right. You each allowed it to happen.
Shame, shame, shame.
All right, Barry. Thank you.
Barry Joe Stull. See you later.
We got it.
Consent agenda item. Does anyone wish to pull any item from the consent agenda? I want to refer 11 or hold over 1148 to September 1st, unless there's objection, and pull.
It'll be 1158.
Sorry, 1158, unless their objection is held over to September 1st, and I'd pull to the regular agenda 1153. Any other consent agenda items to be addressed? Then, Sue, would you please call the vote on the consent agenda item?
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Want to thank Jim Blackwood for his hard work to finalize the details of the donation of property by Hoyt Street Properties to the city, which allows us now to move forward on the Fields Neighborhood Park. Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a time certain that includes three items, a resolution, and a report, and two ordinances. Can you please read the titles for 1148, 1149, and 1150?
1148. Authorize the city to sign the Declaration of Cooperation in support of the Portland Metro Region Sustainable Communities Grant Application. 1149. Authorize application to the Department of Housing and Urban Development Community Challenge Planning Grant in the amount of $560,000 for the Affordable Housing Strategies for Portland's existing light rail transit corridors project. And 1150, authorized application to the U.S. Department of Transportation for Transportation Investments Generating Economic Recovery II grants not exceeding $20 million and approve designated grant proposals to assist in Portland's economic recovery.
Well, I'm pleased with Commissioner Nick Fish, who will I will turn to in just a minute to introduce these council items for public review and council consideration. This year, the federal administration is taking a new approach to coordinate and leverage the investments of HUD, the U.S. Department of Transportation, the EPA, through the Partnerships for Sustainable Communities Initiative. Sustainable Communities, which emphasizes integrated thinking and equity, is inclusivity, is taking the kind of comprehensive and collaborative approach that we are using to develop the Portland Plan, the city's next 25-year strategy for Portland to be a more equitable, sustainable, and prosperous city. The Sustainable Communities Livability Principles look like a page from the Portland Plan. They emphasize equitable access to transportation choices, equitable, affordable housing, enhanced economic competitiveness, supporting existing communities and neighborhoods, coordinating and leveraging federal policies and investment, enhancing neighborhoods by creating healthy, safe, walkable communities for all. The Declaration of Cooperation establishes the formation of a consortium of public agencies and community-based groups with Metro as the lead applicant to seek the grant. Together, we will work to bridge the gap in how governments and community organizations provide services to underserved communities and neighborhoods. We strongly endorse this grant application. If awarded, our region will work to ensure that everyone has access to a livable community and neighborhood. This grant will help us plan to ensure opportunities for housing, transportation infrastructure, economic empowerment for all residents. Our region must continue to be at the forefront of planning in ways that benefit historically disadvantaged communities, especially communities of color and those living in poverty. This is expected to be the first of many grant opportunities under the Sustainable Communities Program and represents a key opportunity for Portland region to demonstrate our commitment to social, economic, and environmental sustainability. Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. Margaret, would you come forward? And Mayor, I think you've stated it very eloquently, so I'll be very brief. I'm excited about the potential for aligning our investments in housing and transportation on a regional basis and for incorporating the principle of equity in all of our planning. This grant is important to me because it's an opportunity for us to translate our values into action and has the potential to be a game changer at the federal level. If we don't make progress towards goals that produce more affordable housing options and economic opportunities for underserved communities throughout our region, we will miss a historic opportunity to build a more inclusive and prosperous region. And under this federal law, we risk losing federal funding for key transportation projects. This grant opportunity requires us to have communities of color and advocates for low-wage workers at the table during planning so that we can change our behavior and make investments that meet our equity goals. But our success will not be measured in terms of reports generated, plans made, or good intentions. It will be judged on the basis of outcomes. Before I introduce Margaret Van Vliet, I want to commend Kate Allen of our team at the Portland Housing Bureau, who's been our lead on the project. She's done a masterful job working to convene regional stakeholders, as well as bringing all the city players into this process. Thank you, Kate. And it's my pleasure to introduce Margaret Van Vliet, who's the director of the Portland Housing Bureau.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish. Mayor Adams and commissioners, I'll be brief today because I think we want to hear from our guests. But I do want to just take a minute and tell you why this federal grant opportunity is really compelling from my perspective. And I guess what I would share is that for all our great success in the region and in the city around land use and transportation planning, we know we have some real structural problems when it comes to access to opportunity. One big aspect of that structural problem is a lack of shared responsibility for providing the safety net around homelessness and affordable housing in the region. But another aspect of that structural problem is what Nick mentioned, and that has to do with the lack of access to opportunity and prosperity faced by too many members of our communities that come from communities of color. At PHB, at Portland Housing Bureau, we are convinced that the road to prosperity must start with stable housing for families. And we are increasingly cognizant of the fact that the location of that housing matters greatly. In the words of Professor John Powell of the Kirwan Institute, access to opportunity can be seen as both racialized and spatialized. And what that says to me is we must get smarter about putting our housing money into projects and programs and organizations that meaningfully reverse past trends and help those in the community who struggle with poverty to overcome barriers and move towards prosperity. And of course, it's not enough for the Portland Housing Bureau to get really smart about this if our regional partners, government and private alike, aren't also on board with this agenda, which brings me to my optimism. I've been at this housing game a long time, and two things are at play that I've never seen before, but that give me great hope. The first is that the regional governments are more substantively ready to change the rules of engagement. And I really believe that this declaration of cooperation, which I want to note I've actually seen used with very good success in other sectors, sets the stage for better decision-making and collaboration. The second is that our federal agency partners, as already noted, are really breaking down their own silos and ready to use both carrots and sticks to compel local communities, us, to plan for equity of access and sustainability in ways they never have before. For the first time, HUD, EPA, U.S. Department of Transportation, and Federal Highways are saying to us at the local level that if we want the special grants to flow from Washington, then we need to start planning and acting differently with an eye towards these vexing equity problems. This does feel to me like a true game changer. So with that, I'll close, and I want to, I think, bring up our guests. We have Andy Cotugno from Metro, who, as you've already heard, is the lead applicant. We also have with us today Marcus Munday from the Urban League and the Coalition of Communities of Color, and Dave Unsworth from TIMET.
Thank you, Margaret.
Remember, Andy, you're under oath. There's some questions I want to ask.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. This really is a significant step. It does represent a game changer for the feds, and it will provide the platform upon which this region can continue to be successful at leveraging the funds that we go after at the federal level. It's also a game changer locally. You know that my chief operating officer just released recommendations about needing to better integrate local resources, not just federal resources. If we can successfully accomplish that, we can get more mileage out of the dollars that do get spent and better align housing dollars with transportation dollars with other economic investments in the region. I really want to stress that this is a consortium application. That's the point of all these logos on the Declaration of Cooperation. Metro is the lead applicant because the rules require that you designate a lead applicant. But it clearly says Metro's not in charge of this program. The consortium is the applicant, the real applicant for this program. And having a collaboration amongst all these parties, government and non-government organizations, is going to be the key to success. If we can work together and reach agreement, then we can accomplish a lot by doing that. At the HUD level, we are recognized and respected for doing a good job at integrating land use, transportation, and environment. But we haven't done an adequate job, and they know it, in integrating housing and affordable housing and equity into that agenda. This is our chance to fill that gap and really demonstrate and provide them with the tools that can be a model for elsewhere in the country, like we've been a model for the land use, transportation, and environment front. We can really set the example for the rest of the country. Thank you.
Thanks for your good work.
Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for letting me speak with you today. My name is Marcus Mundy. I'm the president and CEO of the Urban League of Portland. As you know, we're an empowerment organization, and our mission is to empower the community through education, employment, and economic opportunity. I'm also a proud member of the Coalition of Communities of Color, and we're a group of culturally specific organizations aligned to advocate for equity and opportunity for all Portlanders and really all people in the region. When I travel nationally, and you all know this, people regale me with their stories of love of our community. Portland is so livable, Oregon is beautiful, so well planned, great transportation, and a sustainable community. Frequently, I and the communities of color experience a tale of two cities. People of color, as you know, are overrepresented in all the bad statistics, the statistics that say we're behind in health and education and all of those things. It's chronicled in the State of Black Oregon and the recently released Coalition of Communities of Color report on livability in Multnomah County. But that doesn't define us. Amidst these statistics, I'm finding that the curious new catchphrase is equity. And that's become an overused word that people embrace theoretically without a clear plan of action. And when put to the test with actions that do have equity tenets, people tend to run away from it. But I say all that to say, but I'm excited about this project, and I'm proud to be one of the signers on this Declaration of Cooperation that Andy Cotugno just shared with you. What's unique about this work is that it includes new perspectives and new coalitions not typically at the table, including the Housing Organizations of Color Coalition, that's made up of PCRI, that's the second time PCRI was mentioned today, NEA and Hacienda. And I want to actually personally thank Maxine Fitzpatrick for her hard work in this process, working with Andy and Kate and all the people involved on the Metro and government side, who have done tremendous work in helping to shape this initiative. What they've done in this process should not be taken lightly. If done right, this initiative will help Portland look different in the next 25 years, and we have the benefit of that coming with federal money. It's our taxes, but we don't normally get this kind of infusion in our community of federal money for specific gain for Oregon, and I think that's very good. It means that at the end of this, everyone should have access to affordable housing, economic opportunity, jobs, good schools, sidewalks, transportations, all the things that make our community livable. And at all of the wonderful things that propel Portland to the top of everyone's most livable city list. And we have the opportunity to infuse equity into every facet of what we do into this region. It's a paradigm shift, and it's an opportunity to get it right. And we can finally truly live up to the name of being a livable community for all. This initiative will be an abject failure if we don't plan for and focus on, as I think at least two of you have said, on outcomes. The outcomes are the most important thing. What will change? This means a change perspective, change in how we do business, the partners that will help us meet the challenges of our inexorably changing demographics. The demographics are changing. We have to acknowledge that and address that, and I think this project does. I'm optimistic and have enjoyed working with the partners. Again, Andy Cotugno, Kate from Metro, Kate Allen from the city, and all of our governmental partners in this have opened my eyes to a lot of different areas. Collaboration, I'm discovering, is a very, very brutal business, and it's hard to collaborate. And I'll just close with saying, You know, if Mandela could collaborate with his oppressors and figure out a way after they jailed him for decades to work with them, if the folks in Klamath can come together on those water issues and they're coming to some accords down there. I wasn't going to try this, but if Oprah can make nice with David Letterman and wind up, you know, coming together on some things, we can do this project here, and we can make it happen, and we can make it happen fairly for all the citizens. So thank you to the council for your support. I'm heartened to see your support for this work, and I look forward to working with you to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mundy.
Good morning. Dave Unsworth. I'm a senior project development manager at TriMet, and we also see a game changer. Much as this grant is about planning, our federal partners, EPA, HUD, Department of Transportation, are also looking at getting money out in the community faster and in a more efficient way. And so they've developed Tiger grants. Essentially, the city was very successful in securing $23 million for Southwest Moody for Tiger One. We're using that same collaborative approach to look at other infrastructure focused around the southeast quarter. So there's a map I have. I'm not going to talk from this, but it's a reference point that follows the Portland-Milwaukee light rail line, and it builds on that key investment. So as we look at the federal partners saying, what do you want out of this grant? They want sustainability. They want livability. They want economic competitiveness. They want state of good repair. So we look at those set of criteria, and we're trying to form a $10 million federal request, which was the minimum request you can go after, that meets their criteria. So we've had a very collaborative effort with Bureau of Transportation, Art Pierce and Shoshana, PDC, Metro again, TriMet, and even the city of Milwaukee. So as we look at how these different elements and are very competitive and could be funded, that's how we actually go after these. So we end up developing a web page. We're end up doing some video and showing how the benefits of these all tie together. So we're really trying to tell our federal partners why they should invest in this grant, which really is about connecting communities, connecting schools, connecting light rail stops, connecting neighborhoods for bike and pedestrian, building on the investment we already have. In the OMSI district, we're looking at relocating Southeast Water in a way that will allow the OMSI district to redevelop in a safer way, getting the trucks out of the middle of a parking lot, separating their parking lots, putting in the right location, making sure we get as much benefit from the light rail project as possible in the future. In Milwaukee, we've got a bridge that we're building, and we defined it a way that we can put a pedestrian bridge underneath that at a later date. This would fund that. That creates 10 minutes of travel time savings for someone walking to downtown and their Saturday markets. So we've tried to craft a group of benefits that we feel meet and pass the FTA muster, the Department of Transportation muster, that really build on livability, sustainability, and a competitive and state of good repair. And so we do this collaboratively, looking around the table on what's the best thing for the community as we move forward, knowing this is a very focused infrastructure project. So we hope to be successful. You know, the competition is much more stiffer than it was the first time that we were successful in getting a Tiger One grant. But we're seeing the federal government look at grants as a way of getting dollars to people and communities to do the right thing. So that can answer the sustainability question, that can link livability with these dollars. And so we expect that there's going to be more of this as we move forward. Looking at how the federal government sometimes put grants together, they're very difficult and cumbersome. These are more focused, and so we'll take advantage of these and look for opportunities to get infrastructure paid for in part by our federal partners.
One last, if you don't mind. The Sustainable Communities Grant application is a bi-state application. The consortium that it must be applied on behalf of must include the MPO. This has two MPOs. Metropolitan Planning Organization, the federal designation. It must include the central city. We have two central cities. It must include the housing authority. We have four housing authorities as part of this application. So City of Vancouver, Regional Transportation Council, Vancouver Housing Authority have signed the declaration or part of the application. Clark County has indicated interest in joining the consortium as well upon award of the grant. So we've gotten endorsement letters from the Washington delegation, as well as the Oregon delegation.
And I would add one other thing, that as we look at these grants, collaborative is what our federal partners are looking for. I think we've got about 35 letters of support from city councils, from neighbors, from industry, from advocacy groups saying, yeah, this is a good group of investments that we ought to go after. So we do reach out and try and make sure that we're talking to the right people and getting ownership behind these improvements that we're looking at doing.
And what is Tiger?
Tiger is it's essentially Recovery Act dollars. It is transportation investment for generating economic recovery. That's the acronym for it. But essentially dollars that make us recover quicker, that are about infrastructure. And so these can't be used for planning, but they generally come out of some of these planning grants. So these are some great ideas that aren't quite funded locally. How can we get those dollars to help knit everything together?
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
it. We have a question for Marcus.
Sorry.
Marcus,
yes.
So I don't want to put you on the spot, but you mentioned that certain tenets of equity people tend to run away from in practice. Oh. Do you have some examples you'd
That went to my brutal collaboration comment. And when we're talking about changing the way that we've been doing business historically, whether it's addressing certain communities, in this case housing needs, but other needs, I found in this process we weren't willing to let, using the CBO model, the NGO model, the community organization model, many of these community organizations, both in the housing coalition and in the coalition of communities of color, are expert in talking to their community, finding out what the needs are, and even engaging them once a process is underway. And when you start talking about people who have been doing things in a certain way and getting them to say, you know what, we need to offload this to the people that can talk to their constituents better, who can move the needle a little better, and who, for whatever reason, over time, have had capacity issues and not been able to deliver the kinds of capacity that this grant portends for the region if we get it. That's what I was alluding to, the fact that sometimes we just have to let it go to the communities that can talk to the folks directly and that can bring back the results. Some of it is a leap of faith, but our communities have had to take on faith for years, for decades, what the other community has said, the majority community. So we think, in some cases, offload to us, let us handle, let us talk to the people, and we will deliver the results.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much. Is there anyone else signed up to testify on this matter, these matters? All right, Sue, can you please call the vote on the resolution, item number 1148?
Saltzman.
Well, this all sounds very exciting, and I'm really impressed with all the logos on this sheet. I'm still trying to figure out who's all who, but this definitely shows a very good collaboration on helping our community to prosper. Please to vote aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Thank you, Commissioner Fish and Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this, and thank you for everybody on the staff, many, many staffs, and it's challenging to collaborate. I especially like what Mr. Mundy said in terms of outcomes, that we can plan and plan and plan, but what we really need to do is get the dollars to the people who need it and to actually make some changes, and I know this entire council is committed to that under Mayor Adams' leadership. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I too want to thank the mayor and his team, the leadership at Metro, Margaret and Kate and our team, and all the people that have worked tirelessly, and our community partners. This is a beautiful document. This is the third declaration of cooperation I've seen in the last 6 months. The first one that came to council was the declaration of cooperation around community gardens. There's a declaration of cooperation that is in formation around Gateway Green. And this is a declaration of cooperation, which is a precondition to putting in a grant application. In approving this, we're simply saying that we as a region want to apply for a competitive grant of, I think, up to $5 million, which we would then use to do some planning. And as a document in its aspirations, it's a beautiful thing. And I think the mayor was very eloquent in his comments about how a lot of the Portland values and how we do planning has now been adopted at the federal level and is guiding this process, and the fact that, in fact, the woman who's in charge of the department that's going to issue the grant cut her teeth in Eugene. So there's a nice Oregon connection. So I'm optimistic too, but I want to go back to something I said earlier. When we talk about equity, we sometimes, I think, overlook the fact that there has to be some intentionality at the back end and change in our behavior. The mayor and I have started politely calling out the fact that in the four-county area, if you add up all the money, federal, state, and local, that is spent on housing, potentially up to 80% of the dollars are generated and spent in Multnomah County. But we know that there isn't just 20% of the need in the four-county area. And so we talk about equity, and we talk about allowing people to have the option of being in a complete community in some place other than Portland. But you cannot get there unless jurisdictions are willing to spend money and change policies to welcome people. Now, this past year, locally, we spent over $100 million of local dollars to address the urgent housing needs. We have the benefit of being able to use urban renewal districts, and we have a council willing to invest general fund dollars, because the reality is there are not enough federal dollars to meet the need. But this exercise will not be a success if at the end we come up with a regional equity plan, and once again, we're asked Portland to fund it. Because it is just as important that people in Hillsborough and Lake Oswego and Oregon City and throughout our community in Vancouver get to age in place and have access to affordable housing. And that is going to be, when people talk about the game changer, that's where the rubber hits the road. Because if we get this grant and we do the hard work and we don't change our behavior, the federal government will withhold funds to the whole region. And so we can no longer talk as one when it comes to aspirations as a region, but then rely on one jurisdiction to take the lead. Margaret referred to it as shared responsibility. That's a nicer way of putting it. We have a shared responsibility, and complete communities need to be formed throughout the region, and the planning which we hope to do through this process will inform decisions we make region-wide. So I'm optimistic too, but I'm cautiously optimistic, because good intentions alone are not enough, and our success will not be measured in reports, plans, or good intentions. It will be measured in outcomes down the road. So I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Adams.
Well, I want to thank Commissioner Nick Fish and Danielle and Margaret and Kate and his team for their great work and partnership on this issue. I want to thank Metro and TriMet as well for being key partners with us. Commissioner Fish, I believe, said it very well. And this particular, the Sustainable Communities Partnership, is an opportunity for the region to, for everyone in the region to pull its weight, to do its fair share for equity and sustainability in the entire region. And this sets up the framework to allow us to do that. So I also want to thank the federal administration. So aye. Can you please call the vote for emergency ordinance item number 1149?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Well, I didn't comment on the last one. I will comment this time. I'm skeptical generally about these kinds of approaches, because it has been my experience that where governments say they want to diversify and create more opportunity, oftentimes the people that are most responsible for that don't do the hard work to make that happen. So I have kind of simple mantra in my bureaus. If you want to diversify, hire diverse people. And when they don't hire diverse people, I return less to them. When you want to create jobs for underrepresented communities, you partner with those organizations that train people, such as is in North Portland, particularly people of color and women. You require your bureaus to partner with them to hire people out of those programs. And if you actually, as an elected official, get in and get your hands dirty on those subjects, you find the barriers that exist in personnel rules and a number of civil service rules. And you have to have the commitment to be willing to go in and challenge the bureaucracy personally to make that happen. So I'm skeptical about the approach because I haven't seen goals in and of itself that are voluntary work before. I think each of us need to personally commit ourselves to making some of the changes necessary to hire more diverse people and to create more economic opportunity for minority and women-owned and emerging business contractors. And where I have worked to do that, I have discovered what the barriers are in city bureaucracy. So if this helps change that, great. And if I can do something to help make that happen, I'm committed to do that. Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Can you please call the vote for emergency ordinance item number 1150?
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Is approved. Can you please read the title for time certain 1151?
Report on East Portland Expo and the City of Portland's partnership with neighborhood organizers.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor Adams. Representatives of East Portland neighborhoods are here to present a report of the East Portland Expo and the City's partnership with neighborhood organizers. So would Mark White and Katie Larcel, is that who's here? Please come on forward. So while they're setting up, I'll just explain that this is only a two-year-old event in East Portland neighborhoods. It's sponsored by all 13 of East Portland's neighborhoods and led by Mark White with lots of volunteer help. And it's amazing. It's absolutely wonderful. It's a means for East Portland residents to celebrate everything that's wonderful about East Portland, including wonderful diversity, an abundance of nature-based assets, and a significant focus on children and family. It's also a way to share this with the rest of the city. And for this year, we had the additional partnership of having Sunday Parkways as part of the event and having Sunday Parkways participate and get all the way east, which was wonderful. Because I think a lot of Portlanders came to realize. We had an opening at Gilbert Heights Park, which Commissioner Fish did a couple of weeks ago. And I was on the Hawthorne Bridge walking across to get to my car, and Elizabeth Kennedy Wong of Parks was cycling across the Hawthorne Bridge on her bike. She got to the park before I did. And I thought that that was a great testimony to the fact that it really you can get anywhere in Portland in very little time by many different modes. And we are all celebrating today the achievements of East Portland. So I'll turn it over to Mark.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I appreciate that. I have public testimony written for all of you, and it's being handed out. So I think I'm going to, for the most part, just read this. So again, my name is Mark White, and I'm the event planner for the East Portland Exposition. And joining me today is Katie Larcel, who is here on behalf of the East Portland Action Plan. So I'd like to thank Commissioner Fritz once again for helping to make this presentation possible. The 2010 East Portland Exposition was held on July 17th and 18th. Over the 2 days, approximately 10,000 people attended the event, with much of that success due to the partnerships with Sunday Parkways and Movies in the Park. I've also included some photos taken at the event with my written testimony that you have there. And then the event also commissioned Portland Youth Builders to create a short video about East Portland that was shown immediately prior to the movie each night, and we'd like to share that with you right now.
I noticed the volume is quite low. If you want to narrate some as it goes along, feel free to.
Okay, great.
Is there any sound?
City Center has a large variety of activities for all ages, including art, sports, homeschooling support, and a preschool program. East Portlanders can now officially boast they have the first green pole in the nation to receive LEED Platinum recognition. The 24,000 square foot addition on the backside of the center houses three pools, a conventional lap pool for serious exercise buffs, a warm water leisure pool for seniors and young children, and a whirlpool spa. Located at Southeast 100th and Powell, Ed Benedict Park houses
occurrence of one of each of its kind in the United States. Once rural farmland and orchards, East Portland still has the largest tracts of green space in the city. Parks throughout East Portland serve as reminders of its vast and untouched natural beauty. At 24,000 square feet, the Midland Library is the largest branch of the Multnomah County Library. Midland boasts a large collection of books, as well as audio and visual materials, periodicals, and electronic resources in English, Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese that can be accessed on site or from a home computer. The Wattles Boys and Girls Club is a program offered year-round for youth ages 6 to 18. The club provides academic support, a sense of belonging, and a place where members can be themselves. The Columbia River Slough is a waterway about 20 miles long on the floodplain of the Columbia River. This historic wetland is located in East Portland, as well as Gresham, Fairview, Wood Village, and unincorporated Multnomah County. East Portland also serves as the gateway to the Portland International Airport. PDX was voted best airport in the United States 3 out of 4 years by Condé Nast Traveler magazine. East Portland has a great number of natural attractions, like Rossi Farm, one of Portland's longest continually running farms. Established in 1860, it's popular for its pumpkin patches and its ghost town exhibit. The Leech Botanical Garden is home to a diversity of plant life, like the Calmeopsis leechiana, a rare flower named for the garden's original owner, Lily Leech. Zinger Farm, purchased in 1913 by Ulrich Zinger, became a nonprofit farm in 1999, teaching young people about the benefits of organic gardening, environmental stewardship, and healthy eating. A now extinct volcano, Powell Butte has over 9 miles of trails for hiking, biking, and horseback riding. East Portland is also home to Kelly Butte and Classic Butte. East Portland schools are unprecedented for their academics, sports, and creative arts offerings. Building communities and building lives, Portland Youth Builders helps young people who are pursuing their GED or high school diploma while providing vocational education in green construction or computer technology. David Douglas High School provides students with an exceptional education taught by highly qualified educators using the latest teaching techniques and technology. David Douglas has a diverse athletic program, including baseball, basketball, track, swimming, lacrosse, and more. Park Rose High School offers educational tracks in art and communication, business and technology, and health careers. They also work in collaboration with the Park Rose Farmers Market every year. Throughout the Portland metro area, TriMet provides extensive bus and MAX light rail services. TriMet's transportation options improve mobility, reduce traffic congestion, and greatly reduce air pollution, making East Portland a green and healthy environment. By 2015, the Gateway Regional Transit Center is projected to be one of the most accessible and environmentally sustainable locations in the Portland metropolitan area. The Gateway Transit Center is adjacent to two interstate freeways, light rail transit to downtown, the airport, Gresham, and the Clackamas Town Center. The Springwater Corridor is the major segment of the 40-mile loop, which was inspired by the 1903 Olmsted plan of a parkway and boulevard loop to connect park sites. The eventual developed trail will be over 21 miles long. The route is a scenic one, encompassing wetlands, buttes, agricultural fields and pastures, residential and industrial neighborhoods. Close to Johnson Creek, one of the last free-flowing streams in Portland's urban area, the trail crisscrosses the stream on its course to the Willamette River. The Lentz International Farmers Market is Portland's only international market, featuring fresh produce, international foods, musical entertainment, chef demonstrations, and kids' activities. The market accepts food stamps, WIC, and senior citizen discounts. Southeast 82nd Avenue, also known as the Avenue of Roses, is Portland's thriving international district. You will find many international markets, including Fubon, the largest Asian market in Oregon. Chinese, Vietnamese, Mexican, Russian, and African families, as well as others, have made East Portland their home, thereby creating a vibrant and exciting community to live, shop, and learn. Thank you for exploring our neighborhoods.
So, thank you. And for a first pass on branding, I think it was a really wonderful experience. And on top of that, many of the students who participated in filming that lived in East Portland and were kind of introduced to a part that they may have not known. And in addition to that, we paid $200, which I think is a pretty sweet deal. So with that first video under our belt, our hope for the next video is to include more emphasis on the tremendous diversity within the East Portland, as well as the leadership role of East Portland Neighborhood Associations and the East Portland Action Plan. The East Portland Exposition is many things, but most pointedly, it's a way for residents of East Portland to come together and celebrate all the things that make East Portland such a vibrant place to live: our incredible diversity, our abundance of nature-based assets, and our strong emphasis on children, families, and community. It's also an opportunity to introduce East Portland to the many Portland residents who may still be unfamiliar with our part of the city and the true depth and breadth of Portland. Our commitment to community is clearly reflected in the choice of food vendors. Each food vendor was either a community organization or an East Portland community member, and our plans are to continue and expand on this commitment. We also hope to expand the kids area with more emphasis on physical activity to help reinforce the healthy active living goals of Sunday Parkways. Free health testing was also available, including vision and hearing, as well as blood pressure, lead, and glucose testing. Attendees were able to receive shiatsu massage and acupuncture, and Tai Chi and Qigong demonstrations were also part of the of this component. The Multicultural Share Fair was a tremendous success. Performances and activities had hundreds of attendees, and I'm thrilled to report that the event was also a catalyst for cross-cultural community building. For example, a Native American performer was teaching Native American dance techniques to a Russian dancer, and a Haitian drummer was teaching Haitian drumming techniques to a Native American drummer. Groups represented were very pleased with attendance and were already discussing possibilities for next year, which I thought was really nice. Plans for next year are to make the multicultural performances the sole focus of entertainment during the day and to provide opportunities for additional cultural groups to be represented and to expand on the interactive cultural activities that were available. Main stage entertainment is the one component where change is being considered. I thought the bands who played throughout the day were excellent, but the multicultural component clearly was the preferred choice for attendees. And if I were to be granted my ultimate dream for entertainment for the event, it would be to have local bands with significant name recognition, such as Storm Large and Pink Martini, to perform each night. If I was able to recruit them, I would hope to be able to have the Portland Community Media Youth Club film the event in collaboration with Oregon Public Broadcasting. And my goal would be to have them mentor the youth through that opportunity. And the resulting film hopefully could be turned over to OPB as a way to generate revenue for that organization. And I think it would be very helpful for all concerned to be able to do something like that. I mean, it's a big thing to hope for, but it certainly doesn't hurt to try. So with that, the largest obstacle I would say probably for the event is clearly funding. We're committed to making sure that it remains free to all attendees, and subsequently we're very dependent on outside funding and in-kind donations. This year we were very fortunate to have a very strong partnership with Parks and Recreation, who provided sound, movies, and the rock wall in exchange for sponsorship. And promotion, of course, is key, especially for reaching residents outside of East Portland. The partnership with Sunday Parkways and Movies in the Park was key to our success for promotion this year. And next year we'll be placing very strong emphasis on social networking, especially the social networks of the many cultural groups who will be represented. And in addition to that, print and television media partners will be pursued. So at this time, I'd like to have Katie Larcell speak for a few minutes.
Thank you, Mark, and thank you, City Council, for allowing me to speak. And really, I took this chance to come down here because I really wanted to thank Mark White for all the work that he's done on this event. It's a huge amount of work. it's something that he came up with, and it's grown, and with all the partnerships, it's been a big success, and it's wonderful to be able to say thank you from East Portland. I'm going to pretend like I'm representing everyone out there, and be able to say that here in front of City Council. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you.
Handshake. And.